The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to another installment of the Lifeboat Hour. I am back in Culver City tonight after 2 weeks up in Sonoma County, California, with some just amazing people and doing some amazing things. I'm starting to see how the lifeboat life is lived, especially when it comes to community. And I have to tell you, the shock between being there for 2 weeks and coming back is amazing. It's just a completely different thing, and I am becoming more convinced by the day that just as important as physical preparation is, preparation with your friends, neighbors, your tribe, your family, building community is of critical importance, because it is a shock when you really start to see it, feel it, taste it, and walk it a little bit, but it's great stuff. Anyway, we have a great guest tonight who's a seasoned investigative journalist and a rare thing, an expert on what's happening with S-510 on food safety and state and federal efforts to clamp down on raw milk. Raw milk is kind of the poster boy for the movement to grow, exchange, and sell healthy, organic, and locally grown food. And if you buy all of what's out there, you might be convinced that the Department of Homeland Security with this bill, S-510, is going to throw you in a concentration camp if you grow a tomato and give it to your neighbor. I don't think so. There's a lot of facts, suspicion, and in some cases a lot of hysteria about S-510 and what is going on when it's enacted. It just passed the Senate with a key amendment attached this last Friday. Some things are as bad as you think, but many are not. There are some very important issues to be concerned about and watch closely, and it's kind of imperative that we in the lifeboaters sustainability movement know what to worry and argue about and what not to. We have to separate the chaff so that we can focus our energies productively. So this is a real important issue. We'll be on with David in a few minutes. We got some things to do first. First, I want to thank listener Candy Wadsworth. Last week I was on the show. I asked if anybody knew of training schools for children that would help them to prepare for wilderness survival and the challenges that are most certainly right in front of us right now. And she sent in three schools. And as a result of that, we have some requests out. I think one of them will be a guest on our show next week. We'll be talking about how to prepare children for the challenges of collapse. And I think that's very important. My producer wasn't able to lock up a guest before we went to air tonight, but we'll let you know on the CollapseNet website as soon as we have it nailed down. In a second, I'm going to give some news updates from the World News Desk at CollapseNet, which that's CollapseNet.com, which as of today is now in 55 countries. And there are now we just topped 800 entries in our Lighthouse directory, thanks to the amazing work of Susie Gruber, one of our volunteers. And we're up to 15 regional blogs now and counting. And we've given away 15 barter memberships for people who have submitted really useful news items and items for the directory. And we're just getting ready to offer more barter memberships for people who will do regional blogs. I think that's underway. So that there is a way that if you can't afford $100 a year or 27 cents a day, we can certainly make use of you and you don't have to have money. To all the staff, volunteers, and now all the talented writers who are putting meat on our bones at CollapseNet, you're making it a real asset in these increasingly uncertain times, and they are. I offer my thanks. You can find out more by going to CollapseNet at www.collapsenet.com. Now I got to pitch a little bit for some friends of mine. That's Transition Towns U.S., Transitions U.S. They're linked from the CollapseNet page. For those of you who don't know, they're talking about a transition to a post-petroleum-based world. Founded some years ago in England by a gentleman who's a permaculture expert and won't get on an airplane because he doesn't want to leave that kind of a carbon footprint. I hear that. We do what we have to do. But at any rate, Transitions US was founded in 2009 and just a couple years ago. And since then, and it's growing exponentially. They now have 77 transition towns initiatives around the country, and I know there's like seven in Los Angeles alone. Very active groups that are getting a lot more active and a lot more interest. Transition towns train people on how to start organizing your local community, and they've got a tremendous range of skills. I know all the people who are involved up in Sonoma County, but I've met many around the country, and I got to say that these guys are great, and they've been given a $100,000 challenge grant from just a wonderful concerned individual out there who cares about peak oil, who knows about it, and who has opened generously their pockets over the years, so that if they can raise $100,000, he'll match it. And right now, I got to tell you, transition towns are needed desperately, and they're kind of a perfect complement to with CollapseNet. We work well together, energizing each other, and that's what this movement needs to do now. So I get nothing from this, but if you would like to donate tax free to help transition towns meet this challenge grant, which has to be done by December 31st, go to their website at www.transitionus.org. Transitionus.org. And I'm sure they will appreciate it, and everybody else who's waking up now to all this will appreciate it too. Okay, if you've been watching the World News Desk at CollapseNet, I know that you know that there's no better source in the world for a daily aggregation of carefully researched news stories. You get the same analysis from me there every day that for years made my old website, From the Wilderness, or FTW, a favorite of policymakers, news media, and people who really wanted to see what was coming. And boy, have we been vindicated, sadly, over the last few months. But there's a new issue that's rapidly not just moving to the front burner. It's kind of taking over the whole stove and the oven and the kitchen and everything else. And that happens to be China. It's a major political and economic possibility that there will be confrontation, serious, on political fronts, economics, and even military fronts, maybe cyber war in the very near future. We've been preparing you for that, or showing the signs for that on the World News Desk for a few solid weeks now, and the arrows are very clear. But I want to read you something. This is something that I didn't write. This came from Yahoo News, Yahoo Finance. That's one of the largest news entities out there with the largest readerships. It's a story by Charles Whelan, A War of the Worlds for the Modern Day. I'm reading now. In 1938, Orson Welles scared the nation with a faux radio report on the Manhattan of a Martian invasion of the Earth. That's better than a Manhattan invasion. The 60-minute broadcast, based on H.G. Wells' novel War of the Worlds, was disguised as a series of news reports documenting the alien invasion. Many listeners tuned in mid-broadcast and became panicked. People went nuts. Anyway, so this guy writes A New War of the Worlds, and it has to do with China. Reading. Modern radio drama, 6:31 a.m. Chicago time. Host, if you're just tuning in, we have a major news report. At approximately 3 p.m. yesterday, Beijing time, a Chinese defense official announced that the government was suspending the purchase of U.S. Treasury bonds and would consider setting a significant portion of the bond holdings to the poorest to protest the decision by American officials to back Japan in ongoing territorial disputes in the Sea of Japan. In overnight trading, interest rates in the U.S. Treasury bonds skyrocketed to a high of 13%, sending Asian stock markets plummeting. Japan's Nikkei average fell 28% before trading was halted 35 minutes before the official close. The European stock markets were unable to open. Officials of the New York Stock Exchange are meeting now to discuss whether the market will open on time. This story goes on for several pages. It's a great read. You'll find it up on the CollapseNet website either tonight or tomorrow. It should be up there soon. And I recommend everybody read it. Of course, it's linked on our World News Desk as well. But the point is this. Quantitative easing, with the printing of $600 billion by Ben Bernanke, has had some very profound and instant effects. Basically, by printing that much money or easing that much credit, the United States became a place where money loses money. Now, how does that work? Well, rich people, really rich people, really rich institutions park their wealth in different currencies and countries based upon how strong or how much money they can make by leaving their money there. Now, with U.S. interest rates at zero, now falling below zero, money here is not doing anything. Money, one of the sicknesses of the way money works is that money exists to make more money. So in the carry trade, what happens is, that's what it's called, the people holding these hundreds of billions and billions and trillions of dollars in wealth in U.S. dollars now leave U.S. dollars and put their money someplace where they can make money, whether it's Brazil, Thailand, Vietnam, or China. And what's happening as a result of QE2 is that currencies around the world are inflating, and they're carrying the load, and Bernanke's $600 billion is not doing jack to help us out here. The issue ostensibly is that that China refuses to revalue its yuan or renminbi, but same names, two different names, same currency, and devalue it, which would strengthen it, which would make U.S. Exports cheaper to buy. What do they want to buy? They want to buy our farms. They want to buy our food. They want to buy our precious metals. They want to buy natural gas. I don't know how they're going to get it to China, but I just read something on that the other day. But China's resisting because we have triggered inflation anytime capital flows into a developing market or any other market like this in a tidal wave. You trigger inflation. I've seen 8 or 9 stories about inflation hitting in China, which is already near meltdown. The last thing that you want to do is pour currency into an economy that is already overheated, superheated, and already imploding. In the meantime, major fuel shortages in China. So there's a war of words escalating, and what we're going to see probably, we just saw today, Ben Bernanke going out and attacking China. I mean, just being pretty outspoken, but the Obama administration is part of this tag team, because there's clear signs that President Obama is going to declare China a currency manipulator, which will lead to trade wars, and hence we see now a lot of military movement in the South China Sea and Sea of Japan, amount to being a naval confrontation over some islands. The Senkaku Islands, if you're Japanese, and I think it's Dayo Islands if you're Chinese, and other islands in the region like the Spratlys, which I've been writing about for years, and so we may get some real serious gunboat barrel to barrel, muzzle to muzzle diplomacy here in the very near future over that. So we all got to watch China, because they could pull the plug on the economy in a heartbeat, and quite frankly, the U.S. and China sound like they're cruising for a fight. And I don't think either one's going to be able to back down now, especially with the EU falling apart. Ireland now, just hours ago, announcing a 120 billion euro bailout. Oh, my God. You know, with Portugal and Spain and Greece getting ready to come back again. The European Union is toast. We've been posting stories on that all week, and that's pretty much clearly recognized now around the world. So these are spicy, spicy times we're in right now. So, okay, have I taken care of all the business? If you want to call in and talk to me or David Gumpert about what's going on with S510 and food, the number to call is 1-888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and I'll get them right on my screen, and I'll read your questions. So, without further ado, we got a lot of important stuff to talk about. Now, let me see. I printed all this stuff out. I hate being an old guy. David Gumpert. I found it. Here's the bio. All right. I'm going to be 60 in February. Give me a break. David Gumpert is a writer who specializes in health and food issues. He is author of The Raw Milk Revolution, Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights. He blogs at The Complete Patient, which you can find at thecompletepatient.com. Throughout the years, David has covered a number of health and regulatory issues, including the regulatory excesses involving raw milk and food safety. He holds degrees in poli-sci, that was my major at UCLA, and journalism, and spent 9 years as a staff reporter with the Wall Street Journal. And he writes on food and business for a number of online publications, including the Huffington Post. I should mention, full disclosure, that David's publisher is also mine, Chelsea Green, the world's largest publisher on books of sustainability. And so, David, are you there? Welcome to the show.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Cool. All right, so I'm trying to do all these updates here on S510, but and you wrote the book on raw milk. Clearly, I think all of this speaks to one large issue, which is pretty clearly defined right now, which is, as I would say, the collapse of human industrial civilization is proceeding, or as the rest of the world would say, things are just getting hairier by the minute. The issue is corporations don't want people producing their own food locally because that weakens corporate profits. Was I close to a bullseye there?
Pretty good. And people are producing more of their own food, and in fact that's probably the fastest growing area of food production, food distribution, food sales, and they don't like that either.
Since my movie Collapse has been out, I have been all over the country and I'm traveling a lot more, and I'm just becoming so aware that this is a huge movement. I mean, this is something moving under all of the carpet. But it's funny, I'm a raw milk drinker and I love it, and actually I wouldn't have been had I not heard about a raid on Rawsome Foods. When was that? Earlier this year in Venice, California?
June 30th of this year, yes.
Aren't the raids like making more people go look for this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. I've said before that I think the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is it's almost as if they've been hired as public relations gurus for places like Rawsome. I mean, they just put them on the map. And I think Rawsome's membership since that raid has gone, if I'm not mistaken, from something like 800 to about 1,500 members. So, you know, FDA and its various partners, they had about five or six agencies in on that raid, collaborating on that. They working together, they managed to double Rawsome's membership.
Nationwide, what's your assessment of the status of raw milk today? Because your book has been out for about a year, I think. So where have we come in that year since your book's been out?
Well, I think once again, the book and I probably more so the kind of the government's shifting campaign against raw milk has helped popularize it. What's happened since my book came out is there've been a ton of articles in various media, TV, radio, blogs, online publications, major places like Washington Post and LA Times and so forth have all written about raw milk. And so what they've done is, once again, they quote the FDA as saying, how we're playing Russian roulette with our health and all that sort of thing, and the CDC saying similar things. And, it's almost like the more they say it, the more people say, gee, if they're saying it's bad, it must be good.
Yeah, you know what? That's exactly the conclusion that I was coming to. And there's a reason why I went to this point before we went a little broader in the discussion, which is because I don't see a concerted effort, if you will, by the federal government to remove raw milk as doing anything but triggering, a whole lot of mess that they don't want right now. And I really don't think they have the stomach for. You documented some court cases that were fought, and I think you even talked about some prosecutors who just got tired of it after a while, right?
Yeah, well, in states, like I said, the campaign has moved around. I mean, it started in Michigan and Ohio, and it's moved to New York and Pennsylvania and California and Tennessee and Massachusetts, Connecticut, but in places where cases have gone to elected prosecutors, like in Michigan in particular, and now in Wisconsin most recently, the prosecutors kind of seem to sit on the cases for a long time, and then don't do anything. Now, Michigan, I talked with that prosecutor. This was in 2006, 2007. That went on for about 6 months. He conducted a pretty large investigation, you know, looking at where raw milk had come from, but where cheese had come from, honey, and you know, he really. And at the end of the day, he said, you know, this is not a winning thing for me. I should go back to rapes and drug deals and
I don't think people have a lot of stomach for spending all that kind of money for something which many of us view as a fundamental and non-negotiable human right. It's time for something we do every show, David. I'm involved in this band called New White Trash. Because at times like this, you have to write some music or do something to keep yourself from going crazy. And we've just released a double CD with 37 songs called Double Wide. And I'm going to play tonight probably the angriest song that we have. And you have to think a cross between Monty Python and Saturday Night Live before we go to this. It's called Advertising. You'll hear me singing part of it. But Andy Kravitz, who produced this for us, he's got two Grammys. At the end of the song, he made his own editorial comment. You'll hear it. Advertising.
Yeah.
Find that at www.newwhitetrash.com. I'd like to say hi to my bandmates, Doug Lewis and Kara Tompkins, out there tonight. You can go there and download, listen to all 37 songs. You can download the CD for $12.12. We can mail you a physical one. We've got a sponsor's one. We're very proud of this music, mixed and mastered for us at the end by Bob Rice, whose last project was for Roger Waters at Pink Floyd. So that's New White Trash and Advertising. Okay. I have to take a little comic break every now and again. You know what I mean? Okay, so I assume, David, you've been following S-510 as it progresses whatever it does through the Senate. A different version has already been passed in the House of Representatives. The Senate bill was voted on and passed Friday of this last week with an amendment by Senator John Tester.
Actually, it wasn't. The bill wasn't passed. The cloture was invoked.
Oh, that's correct. Thank you very much. Okay, I misread something, and that's one of the things you have to sort out here about.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's really very involved.
Let me just say, because I've done a lot of work on legislation over the years, investigative journalism, and I did it from the wilderness, and I read the Patriot Act front to back. Oh, that was, I don't know why I did that, and also the Homeland Security Bill and a number of other bills over the years. And what happens is when a bill is introduced in either house, it has to be voted on by each house separately, and amendments get attached and the bill gets changed. So once it's passed both houses, it has to go to what's called a conference committee, where any differences between Senate and House versions are reconciled. And then it goes after that to the president for signature and then becoming law. So the invocation of cloture means that I think there's a 30-day window that they have to vote on the bill. Is that right, David?
Well, the invocation of cloture means in the Senate that there can't be a filibuster. And that's the Senate is different from the House that way. One senator can stand up and say, I don't like this, and I'm just going to keep talking against it. And unless you get a 60-40 vote on cloture, that basically cuts off debate or sets a limit on debate, then that one senator can block the whole thing. So what happened was, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, cloture was invoked by a vote of, I think, 75 to 25. Now, just to kind of amplify one other thing you said there, normally the bill would go to a conference committee, and I'm talking here from having been on a conference call just this afternoon where opponents of the bill were talking and briefing each other about what was happening. So I think what I have is fairly up to date, and I think what's going to happen now is next Monday there's going to be another vote on cloture. But I guess what I was getting at was, if this bill passes the Senate, which we'll know, I think, within 30 days, then it won't necessarily go to a conference committee, because what you have right now is a lame duck Congress.
Oh, that's right.
So you have the old senators and the old representatives and who tended to favor this legislation. And so there's a move to kind of get this through, railroad this thing through old Congress. And in order to do that, they don't have time for a conference committee. So what they'll do is, if it passes the Senate, they will take that version and bring it over to the House and let the House vote on the same version. And based on what happened with the House before, there's a pretty good chance that they will approve it. But there's a number of kind of legislative parliamentary steps that have to be kind of overcome or dealt with before it goes to the House. But anyway, that's kind of the
okay.
Situation.
Good, excellent. Thank you. I got that totally. Which is, it could be good or could be bad. We don't know yet.
Right. There's some maneuvering that's going to go on. There's going to be another cloture vote, and from what I understand, the actual numbers right now are that the opponents now have risen from 25 to 31. Which you need. Right. What we need to get is 41. And so I would urge. I think the big thing right now is, if for listeners who do oppose this, to call your U.S. senator and let them know. Call their Washington office, call their local office, and let them know that you oppose this, because they have to hear from people, and they have not been hearing from people, because people, it's really been hard, difficult for many people to understand exactly what's going on. This legislation is complicated, and just the term that's used, food safety,
yes,
is such a misnomer that people have been kind of misled about
when
it.
When we come back after the break at the bottom of the hour, that's just in a couple of minutes, I'm going to read one story that I pulled, which has the what I think is the worst possible take. Maybe we'll do that after the break. We'll kind of go through there and say what's in the bill. But before the break now, Senator John Tester, a Democrat of Montana, was successful in getting an amendment attached to the bill last minute on Friday. And it is it's basically provides for exemptions for very small businesses, family scale farmers, and people who are not selling food more than 275 miles away from where they live. There are other features to it, but it's a good thing. Basically, what it does is it protects, and this is what our audience here would be interested in, people who are manufacturing and distributing food locally, which is the first and foremost part of transition out of human industrial civilization and saving lives right now as the collapse worsens. We're all concerned about local food production. We have to go to a station break right now. David, I'm sorry. We're going to go to break and come back, and we can pick up there in just a minute.
Please pull down your veil. Found one life to hold on your head, found a nightingale. Socrates imagined what Aristotle blurred, and Plato never said he really knew for sure if air was really air. Hold out your hand.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Listen to Of Consuming Interest every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., chairman of the board of Citizens for Health. Every Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, we discuss a topic of consuming interest, often about health, but also about politics, commerce, and whatever the current topic of the day might be. Of Consuming Interest, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
This is Adam Kolker from the Brooklyn Jazz Underground. We're going to be hosting a weekly show every Tuesday at 5 p.m., focusing on sounds coming from the borough of Brooklyn. We'll be playing some new releases, doing live interviews, some live performances, maybe even venture out into music from some of the outer boroughs. Brooklyn Jazz Underground, Tuesday at 5, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This way, please pull down your veil. From one life.
That song is Nightingale from New White Trash's Double CD Double Wide. That's Doug Lewis, my bandmate. He wrote and sang that song. It's a takeoff on Plato's Allegory of the Cave, for those of you who ever get back into Greek stuff. We talk about that, too. Coming back from the break, if you'd like to ask a question tonight of David Gumpert or myself on S510 or any food-related issue, please call us toll-free at 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com, and I'll get it right here, and I will put your question on the air. before we go to back to David, David's listening, I'm going to read, you know, I've been looking at articles, and there's a lot of hysterical semi-pseudo-journalism out there, which I don't approve of. And, you know, there's some scary articles, and there's some people trying to get it. But I found one I'll pick as an example that says, that lists the 12 things that are worst or that are dangerous about S-510. And maybe we can get an assessment of whether they're in there and what we think is going to happen. Number one, all food production in the U.S., food production facilities in the U.S. will be required to register with the U.S. government. Number two, any food that is distributed or sold outside U.S. government control will be considered illegal smuggling. I don't believe that. Three, FDA will hire an army of new inspectors to enforce all of the new provisions. Four, the FDA will be mandated to conduct much more frequent inspections. Five, the fees and paperwork requirements will be ruinously expensive. Six, S-510 would place all U.S. food and U.S. farms under the Department of Homeland Security. Seven, S-510 mandates that FDA facilities facilitate harmonization of American food laws with Codex Alimentarius. That's a U.N. provision. I'm not so sure about that. S-510 imposes annual registration fees on any facility that holds, processes, or manufactures foods. 9 S-510 would give the FDA tremendous discretion to regulate how crops are grown and how food is processed. 10 S-510 will give the FDA power to impose a quarantine on specific geographic areas. That exists through other executive orders already anyway. 11 S-510 will give the FDA power to conduct warrantless searches of business records and businesses of small food producers and organic farmers, and 12 opponents of S-510 believe that it would eliminate the right to clean and store seed. David, is it that bad?
Well, you know, actually, most of what you read is accurate. There are a couple things I'm not sure about. I didn't know about number two, the illegal smuggling terminology. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, I'm not sure if that exists.
I haven't been able to find that either.
Yeah, and then you said it would put all food regulation under Homeland Security. I wasn't aware of that either. I think it's all under the auspices of the FDA.
Yeah, that was my take.
Yeah, and then the other stuff, for instance, the quarantining, how foods are grown, setting regulations, is something called good agricultural practices, which is a UN term and a UN program that's used for underdeveloped countries. They want to apply that here, and the FDA is actually in the process of setting so-called good agricultural practices, cover irrigation and crop rotation and that sort of thing, and which is something that farmers have always had complete say over.
So the farmers have had a say in saying what GAP really means and what it contains. It can't be rewritten.
Oh no, farmers have not had a say. I'm just saying that farmers just do what they do that stuff the way they want, right? And I mean that's traditionally, you know, you decide how you want to irrigate your fields and how you want to rotate your crops and how diverse you want your farm to be or not be. So that's always been under the auspices of the farmer. Now what's going to happen, if I understand, as I understand it, the S-510 will require the FDA within a year to set up so-called good agricultural practices, and this will be a list of regulations that will cover a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's unclear to me how they're going to possibly implement that, impose that on farmers, because a lot of farmers aren't going to take real well to that.
No, I'm sure they won't. Which is a whole separate dimension to this. We'll get to in a bit.
The warrantless searches is accurate. They can come in and basically, I think, the way it's phrased is they can look at financial records whenever they decide they want to, and that amounts to a warrantless search.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Same. That was the same with the Patriot Act, being able to do that stuff after 9/11. So this is a serious piece of legislation with the potential for great abuse.
Yeah, there's one other thing that isn't mentioned there, and that's the whole issue of FDA being able to implement what are known as scientific standards. And that it differs from what I understand between S-510 and the House version of the bill. The House version of the bill allows just broadly based scientific standards, which could be everything from pasteurization to irradiation to cloning, covering all foods. Now, as I understand it, S510 uses that same terminology. In other words, FDA has the power to impose scientific standards, but only with regard to vegetables and fruits, as I understand. So they could conceivably require that all our vegetables be irradiated. So that's something.
That would also cause a little bit of a problem.
That would cause a little bit of a stir, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I spent 2 weeks in Sonoma County with some great permaculture people, especially at Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, and my new friend Brock Dolman. I toured the place up there, ate a carrot right out of the ground. It was the best thing I've ever tasted, I think.
Yeah, but, they wouldn't like that.
If we look at all these things they could do, the question is, can they or will they, or, you know, do they have the political will? But now we have the amendment by Senator John Tester, which appears prima facie to establish that if it stays in the bill, it's going to protect the lifeboat builders, the people who are just really starting to get into local food production as a matter of self-defense or life-saving. What can you tell us about the amendment?
Well, the amendment seems an improvement over what was there before, which was that everyone would have to abide by the the requirements of the legislation. Now, what this is saying is the smaller ones will be exempt. I think it's an improvement. It's not. You know, it any time you get the FDA or any other agency kind of setting requirements or minimal standards whereby, you know, some businesses are covered and others aren't, you have it's all open to interpretation. So, for instance, I see it's something like, if you're producing less than $500,000 a year, I presume that's revenues, although I've seen it stated as revenues or profit. There's a big difference between revenues and profit. And then if you're distributing within 400 miles or 275 miles, once again, I've seen it, but let's say whatever, mileage of circumference to determine that you're local. And then the other, I think, is that more than half of your sales are direct to consumers. So they're setting these kind of requirements. Now, anytime the FDA gets involved in doing that kind of thing, and they decide, you know, they don't like you for some reason or another, they can say, you know, they can come in and say, prove to us that you've been actually selling more than half your produce directly to consumers.
Right, right.
And you may not have all the paperwork, or they may, challenge some of your paperwork, and they can then make life very difficult for you. So, I hate to get into that kind of thing. Having said that, yes, it is preferable to the legislation we would have had otherwise, but I just don't feel real good about it.
Which really brings us to kind of a key question. By the way, if you want to call in and ask David Gumpert a question, the number is 888-874-4888. Or email me direct at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. This kind of brings us to, for me, what is the real core issue here. We are living in a time when law enforcement agencies all around the world and in this country are being eviscerated due to budget cuts. The state of Minnesota has a proposal to slash its state police in half. We've closed down some city police departments here in California. Reductions in force are taking place everywhere because the budget isn't there. And clearly, I think there, especially with these actions against food production, there has been a substantial outcry about the waste of money and resources going after people who are buying goods voluntarily. Nobody's forcing them on them. They're joining clubs. They're doing everything right and expressing a complete will to do this. So, question for you is, do you think they would actually try to enforce this mess?
I felt about these cutbacks in regulation. I mean, law enforcement, that's one thing. Police on the street to counter crime, that's one thing. But when they cut back on regulators that kind of you know, make trouble for farmers, I'm not sure that's such a terrible thing. Having said that, though, what's going to happen here is the FDA, once this legislation is passed, will get all kinds of new appropriations to hire an army of investigators and inspectors. And, in fact, they will then have a tremendous amount of leverage because they're going to be the only guys in town that have funding. Mm-hmm. So they can go to the states and say, hey, you know, we need your help on, you know, I don't know, targeting raw milk or targeting farmers who aren't slaughtering their beef in USDA plants.
So who are these people that are going in on these raids where I see the videos with guns drawn?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Are those FDA badge and gun guys? I mean,
I think those particular guys, like in the Rossum raid, I think those are L.A. District Attorney guys. Some of the FDA guys do carry guns, and it wasn't clear who was who in that scene. So yeah, it could just as well have been.
Well, you know, whether it happens over Mortgagegate I should let our CollapseNet members know that next week we're going to be dropping a big bomb down one of the major banks, one of the five largest banks in the country. We've had a whistleblower come to us with an amazing story about Mortgagegate. So you can watch the CollapseNet site for that. I'm back to my old tricks. I mean, back at From the Wilderness, our last expose was the Pat Tillman cover-up. Pat Tillman's mom had come to me with documents, and a brilliant man, Stan Goff, my military affairs editor, decoded the docs with a little help from me, and we published it, and we got a bunch of generals disciplined, so it's kind of fun to be yanking chains again. Sorry for the plug there, but you know, it's time to fight back, and I guess what I'm concerned about is that we have Mortgagegate, which is absolutely out of control. You really don't know how to value a house anymore. The deficit's out of control. We have this mishigas going on with respect to food safety, and everything else is falling apart. Plus, I think it's another 4 million people exhaust their unemployment benefits end of the year. So, what's your assessment of the social climate in this country? You're a professional journalist. Let's see.
Well, I mean, just on the food thing, I think this kind of leads into your question. What's really going on with this food, what they call food safety, is I think a part of a larger trend to sterilize the food supply. Mm. And that way, kind of from the point of view of the public health people, there won't be a problem with pathogens. The problem, though, of course, when you sterilize the food supply, and we've been moving in that direction for a good while now, is that people suffer in their immune systems, and then they become more susceptible to chronic disease, things like asthma and allergies. We have huge problems with these kinds of things, with diabetes, type 2, Crohn's. So all these kinds of things that require a strong immune system leaves us more susceptible. And so when we're in a weakened position, we're more easily controllable.
That might segue into our caller. We have a caller, Michelle from New York. What's on your mind, Michelle?
I want to know. Well, there was a fundraising done at WBAI 6 months ago, and I got some documentary DVDs on Chemtrail. And you know, one of the DVD was like Sky Engineers, and the other one was What in the World Are They Spraying, which shows in Lake County, California, there was a bunch of plane spraying chemtrail, and that town had like 30% more of cancer. And when some ex-EPA, and there was a university there that checked the soil had 61,000% more aluminum in it. And maybe that's what explains why so many people are having Alzheimer's. And, you know, and now after watching the DVDs, I start paying attention to the sky of New York. And at my, I was shocked to see they were doing it in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is a truck driver, and he's driving in Massachusetts and Maryland, and you see them everywhere.
Michelle, chemtrails have been around as a story for at least a decade. And I've done some research
on it. I see the sky, I mean, not to interrupt you, I see the sky green today. The sky was green, orange, and red, and this aluminum with the ray of the sun. And there was like 100 planes in the sky. It's like they're going crazy with this threat every single day.
What I'm saying is I think everybody who's sentient has heard about chemtrails. David, you got anything to say on that?
Well, I think the caller makes an important allusion to one other issue, and that's the quality of our soil. And our soil has been so depleted over the last 50, 75 years that it's... Yes, you have toxins in certain of the soil, but the other thing you have is you have a lot of the soil missing key nutrients. And these are nutrients that can't be replaced by artificial fertilizers, and the soil needs to be restored in many of these cases. And many small farmers now, and that's kind of part of the sustainability movement, mm-hmm. is to restore the soil. And so that's part of the health problem I was alluding to earlier, where where everything is being sterilized, and so we're getting food that doesn't have as these trace elements, these trace minerals that are really essential for good health. And so there's a feeling that we're missing out, and we're also being hurt because what the government is doing is they're focusing almost obsessively on controlling pathogens. And that's what this food safety legislation is about. It's about making sure that we don't have pathogens in our food, which is, to a certain point is valid. But when you go beyond a certain point and you are basically sterilizing this food supply and eliminating good bacteria and trace minerals and elements, well, then you've got more of a problem.
Okay, we have another caller. Sam from New London, Connecticut.
Hey, how are
you
doing?
All right, man, how are you?
Good. Hey, my question was about the food safety bill. If I was going to call my senators, I'm wondering if you had a specific quote from the bill that I could use, to bring up, or to bring up to anybody to make it really, really clear what this bill is going to do, just specific text from the bill. I was wondering if you had any of that.
David, go ahead.
That's a very good question. What I would suggest doing is there are a number of organizations that have posted, suggested letters and responses to senators. And what I would suggest you do is go to one of these organizations, and let me give you the name of one of them. It's the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, and let me give you their website.
He was referenced in your book, wasn't he, David?
Yes, they are in my book. It's www.f for Frank, T for Tom, C for Charlie, L for Larry, D for David, F for Frank .org, ftcldf.org. And if you just look around there a little, you'll see stuff about S-510, and there are some suggested statements you can make to senators to let them know that you're opposed to it.
And as someone who has done a lot of this work on Capitol Hill over the years at From the Wilderness, I can tell you that they aren't so much concerned about quoting the language of the bill. They will know the bill, and they will know the hot-button issues the minute you get to the person in the senator's office. This is a big bill, and everybody kind of knows what's going on around it. What you need to do is just express your opposition to the bill and your support for the Tester Amendment, I would say that I consider the bill to be a declaration of war against local food production and the rights of humans to decide what they eat. That's the kind of stuff that a congressional office will listen to as much as anything else. That was a great question, though. I really appreciated that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thank you. The way to track bills, by the way, I'll just say briefly what I use, and then David can enlighten us if he wants to for his technique. Is that I use one of two websites. I use http://thomas.loc.gov. That's the LOC stands for Library of Congress, where they track all moves. And another website that's extremely useful is called GovTrack, G-O-V-T-R-A-C. Those are the two ways I do it. David, what do you recommend?
Yeah, no, those are great. I mean, there are a number of organizations, as I said, that keep track of some of these things, and you can kind of monitor where what they're saying. Some of the language on the the official government sites can be a little tough to read, although they do a pretty good job of just giving summaries and so forth.
And, of course, it never hurts just to even call the sponsors' offices and, you know, ask them. But the other thing you can do is you can set a Google alert for S-510 or use the proper name of the bill. I would do both. And that is the Food Safety Modernization Act. Boy, what a name that is. So this sounds like something we all really have a vested interest in keeping our eyes on very closely and getting vocal about. Can you give us, in your estimation, David, a time window when we can expect more action on the bill?
We're going to see something one way or the other before Christmas, because that's when Congress will break, and that will be the end of the lame duck Congress. Mm-hmm. So it's something in the next 40 days we should know one way or the other whether this is going to go through. As I said at the beginning, there's going to be some maneuvering, parliamentary maneuvering, things like cloture and whether amendments can be added and that sort of thing. And whether, you know, if you have two different versions, what happens in that case. So that all remains to be decided. But there are powers in both houses that definitely want to see this passed. And plus, the president has indicated he's ready to sign whatever they pass. He is very hot for this.
That's not a good sign to me.
No, it's not.
David, what are you doing now? And tell everybody where they can keep track of you. I understand you're blogging still, right?
I am blogging at the Complete Patient, www.thecompletepatient.com. And I do a lot of blogging there and writing about food safety and the ongoing controversies around raw milk. As you said, raw milk is poster boy, kind of a proxy issue for a lot of these other issues. They are, and actually what's happening, I've been focusing a lot lately on the move by the government to kind of transition from just kind of clamping down on raw milk. Now they're going after raw dairy cheeses, which is a much bigger market. So they are expanding their efforts, as I predicted they would, and trying to move toward sterilizing more and more of the food supply.
Well, this will not go down easily with the American people or with the lifeboat movement, especially as times get worse. And I'm listening to Ron Paul on TV. You know, politics does make strange bedfellows. I'm watching CNN today, and they got the head of the Tea Party in Memphis, Tennessee on. And he's ranting about S-510, and I know that a lot of us might not fully get it, but listen, this is a time when you take whatever allies you can find, because from a political standpoint, I think, David, you'll agree, these are very uncertain times with a lot of values and a lot of political systems and alliances breaking up and under extreme pressure. So we have to look for allies wherever we can find them. David, I'm sitting here looking at your book, The Raw Milk Revolution, Behind America's Emerging Battle Over Food Rights, by David E. Gumpert, investigative journalist, former reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's actually a very, very pretty cow on the cover of your book. I think
it's a jersey. It's a jersey.
I think she's very cute. Listen, thank you so much. I want you to know that you will be getting a free one-year membership to CollapseNet for being a guest on our show. This show will be archived on the Progressive Radio News Network website under my host page, where all the other previous shows are. David, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay.
We'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen, with a guest from one of three schools that teach children how to survive in the wilderness and how it gives them confidence and the willingness and inner strength to face all kinds of challenges and may prepare them for things to come. That's a great endeavor, and we'll be back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.